Hi, this is Zoe, and this is episode 30, and we're talking on how to build your influence. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
So, hey, welcome. So much amazing stuff going on in the world right now. I can't believe that it's just about June and this year, poof, gone. And in Canberra here, it's spectacular. I love this time of year, the beginnings of winter, crystal clear skies. I hope it's good wherever you are. Really exciting thing coming up in July. We've got a half-day workshop for industry association executives. I love working with associations because they operate in such complex contexts. There's a lot going on. There's so many different stakeholders that you have to manage, from the board to staff to membership to often with government and trying to do advocacy work. You need to have big picture context and immediate small picture context. It's fabulous work. In any case, we've got a leadership development workshop for industry association executives on 20 July. There will be an announcement on my website this week. So get on board and have a look. I'll put a link also in the show notes for this episode, which are at zoerouth.com/podcast/influence. Speaking of influence, one of the great books I'm reading right now just came out. It's by Janine Garner. It's called It's Who You Know, How a Network of 12 Key People Can Fast Track Your Success. And it's really a great little handbook. I'm just about halfway through, and she gets you to do an audit of your network and to think strategically about the people you have in your network. And are they doing the right things for you? Do you have a butt kicker? That's somebody who's going to keep you accountable and keep pushing you along. Do you have a teacher? That's somebody who's going to teach you different skills. Do you have somebody who is a lover or somebody who's going to support you? And do you have, what's the other key one? I think it's, oh, I'm going to stuff it up now. Anyway, I will make sure I have all that listed on the show notes for you. It's a great book, highly recommend it. And the other exciting thing is I've managed to book Janine for an interview for the podcast later on this winter in a couple months. So stay tuned for that. What I've been pondering, and it's really sort of been needling away at me, to be frank, is how some people are not successful and how some are. What is the difference between a successful business person and somebody who really struggles? And I've been thinking about particular people in mind, about what is it about them that's just not working for them? And it's troublesome. And it's not that they're not smart. That's not true. It's not that they don't work hard. That's not true. They're in all cases very smart and work hard. And what I've found it boils down to is actually how they show up, how they engage with people. It's their emotional intelligence. Now, that's such a terrible phrase because it implies that you're emotionally unintelligent. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. It's more the subtleties of mastering energy. And that's what I've been really thinking about. My business manager, Bianca Jurd, wrote an article this week for our clients. She does this every week for my one-on-one coaching clients. And it was a really awesome article about how you arrive and leave spaces in your world, whether it's at work or at home. And she has this sort of gradient of different ways of people can arrive and leave. And she said, the top end, people arrive like a tidal wave and they leave a mess in their wake. Maybe that's you. And there are others that sort of just drift in like the sparkles on the water of a lake. And there are those who are like a ninja who kind of sneak in, do their work, and exit. And I thought that was a useful way to start thinking about influence. How is it that you arrive and leave spaces? And what I find is that how people do this really affects their outcomes. Now, I've got clients who have got significant leadership aspirations. There are some who are going for more senior positions in new roles, aspiring to move from CFO to CEO. They are expanding into politics. They're looking to change roles, more influential roles in their industry. And the fundamental question they have is, how do I want to be seen, heard, and valued? What is my leadership brand, and how can I get this out in the world? So how do we figure this out? And I think it's not about being introvert and extrovert. And by the way, that whole discussion around introvert and extrovert bores me to tears. Because I don't think it's actually relevant, because being introvert or extrovert is really about how you gain and regain energy. So do you gain energy and inspiration on your own with your own ideas? That's introvert. Or do you gain energy and inspiration from external stimulation? That's extrovert. It's not about being charismatic or quiet. That's sort of the big misnomer about introvert and extrovert. So it's not about that. And being influential is not about being flamboyant. So we often point to the people who really stand out in the crowd. They dress beautifully. They have big personalities. They laugh. And they're gregarious. And they're the life of the party. And yeah, it's fun to be around those people. And yet they don't necessarily be they're not necessarily the most successful people in the room. I think it's easier to think that way because they have the trappings of it. And yet they're not necessarily, it's not necessarily the key to being successful. What it boils down to is how you be, think, and do. So we're going to go through a few key tips around your beingness, your thinkingness, and your doingness. The beingness piece, what I've noticed in people who struggle to be successful is that the focus, their internal focus, is entirely on themselves, whether they are outspoken or not. And the people who are quiet and focused on themselves show up through the filters of their worries. When you meet them, you can tell there's this text going on in the background of their head about something. Will I be seen? Will I be heard? Will I be appreciated? Am I good enough? You can just sense their subtext. And they've got this narrative or this filter that's squeezing out their energy in a very self-conscious, tethered way. And others, though, when they're entirely focused on themselves, their energy is still focused on themselves, but it's more of a sucking energy. The people who are focused through their worries, their energy is contracted. Those that are energy vampires and who are more outspoken, their energy is, it just kind of sucks at you. And the way to describe this, I think, is they're the ones who, whenever you're having a conversation with them, somehow manage to turn the conversation around to be about them and their issues. You've been in those conversations, right? You're talking to someone, they ask you about something in your world. You tell them and they go, oh yeah, that's just like what happened to me last week. And they go into a 10-minute story about what's happening in their world. And you're left kind of going, well, that was nice, and feeling a bit deflated in the experience. So here's the antidote to whether you have contracted energy or sucking energy. And it is this: simply be interested in other people. Focus on helping other people. It gets you out of your own internal narrative and your own need to suck energy towards you. This is not, need to be clear about this, not being self-effacing and and sort of thinking, oh, I just need to be in service to other people and I'll become deflective and invisible in my interest in others. No, that is not what you want. We do not want martyrs, because you know what? Martyrs end up dead. That's not you. We don't want that. So it's a balance of being curious and interested in people and being curious and interested in yourself, so that you have advocacy for your own interests, your own thoughts, and your own desires at the same time and in parallel in your interest and connection with others. It takes practice, because if you've been showing up contracted, to all of a sudden be interested in other people while downplaying your worry filters takes focus. And if you've been a vampire sucker, it's possible no one's ever given you that feedback before. So if you suspect that you're not quite getting results because you're not connecting with people and you're wondering what it is about you, ask for feedback from somebody you trust, somebody who's going to give it to you straight. And you'll find out whether you're an energy sucker or an energy contractor. In any case, both antidotes are about being interested in other people. Not to the point where you disappear, though. That's an important piece. So that's the beingness tip. The second tip is around think. How you think about situations determines how you can be influential as well. And this is not feeling like you need to have the best and most brilliant idea in the world before you speak up in a meeting. That's not that. I find that the people who are most influential have done the thinking around perspective and in particular around context of the situation which they go into. They think in the context of multiple layers. What does this mean? So imagine you're George, and George is going into a business meeting, and it's their weekly meeting, and they're going in to talk about something strategic for the organization, whether or not they should buy a new bookkeeping business to complement their financial planning business. That's the thing on the discussion table. So people like George, who explore different perspectives, will go into that meeting with a very different preparation. Those who don't explore context will go into it, is it a good idea or a bad idea? Weigh up the pros and cons. George, because he thinks in multiple perspectives, will have gone into it thinking like things like, what's the background of this issue? Like, how long have we been working towards gaining a new enterprise? How long has it been since we've been wanting to expand our services? What are the drivers at play that can be influenced around this, i.e., what are the drivers of the people selling their business? What are the drivers of the people buying this business? What are the dynamics in the room in terms of the team, the executive team that he's part of, and what have they got on the table in terms of motivators? Are they looking to retirement? Are they looking to, at the beginning of their careers, to advance their careers? Are they balancing kids and work and are mindful of the additional stress of a new business can bring on? What about the broader context? What's happening in the political, economic world? Is this a sensible thing to do? Is bookkeeping really going to be a viable business in 5 to 10 years? What are the cultural norms of the existing workplace? Will they be able to adapt and adopt the culture of the new business coming in? So if you can see how George's thought process is quite different to the pros and cons, black and white issues of his peers, how much more influential is he going to be when he raises these concerns? Because he allows people to pause and reflect in a broader way and to be able to be more considered in the decision-making process. If you're like George and you can think in multiple layers of context, you help others to expand their thinking. You don't make them feel stupid. You help them to feel smarter because they can think more three-dimensionally, four-dimensionally, five-dimensionally about an issue, and therefore they feel smart too. So be more like George. Think about multiple contexts before you go into meetings. Or any situation, really. So if you go to a networking function, think about that event in multiple contexts. What's going on? What's the industry? What's at play in that industry? Who's coming to the networking function? What are their agendas, as opposed to just going just for your own? So the third piece in terms of being more influential is what you actually do. Typically, when I read books around influence, it defaults to this category only, and it's around physicality. And all the conventional tips still apply. The first piece is around your packaging and appearance. And I had a colleague just recently do a workshop on this. She said, if you're a keynote speaker, you need to dress in 10% of your speaking fee. So if you charge $5,000 as a speaker, you should be dressed in at least a $500 outfit. And I thought that was an interesting rule of thumb. So I thought about that in the broader context. So if you're an executive who's going for a $250,000 job as CEO, does that mean you need to dress in a $2,500 suit? I'm not sure if that's really the solution. However, I think the principle is the same, is that dress for the job that you want, and that packaging does matter. People make subconscious decisions about your quality based on the quality of your appearance. And I find myself catching myself doing this too. I'll notice people's shoes. And if they're scuffed and crappy looking shoes, but the rest of them's great, I think, attention to detail lacking. Or they're just trying to get by with the minimum. Not something I would want in terms of hiring somebody on my team. So the little things do make a difference. So have a think, do an audit of your physicality. Are your hands and nails manicured? Are you a chronic nail biter, indicating stress, right? And somebody who's a worry wart. So can deflect or detract from your overall impression of confidence and conviction. Simple one to fix in terms of your physicality is your posture and your breathing. How do you sit and stand? Is your rib cage elevated? Are your shoulders back? Are you breathing calmly through your nose, through the diaphragm? And when you breathe through the diaphragm, your voice comes out differently too. And with voice and pitch, make sure that when you drop your voice at the end of your sentences. This is a pretty important one for Australians in particular, because there is this like cultural norm in some areas of the country where everybody elevates their sentences at the end. And it feels like they're constantly asking questions. And it's just weird. Here's another tip I learned also. When you're introducing yourself, make sure that you drop your tone on your last name. For example, "Hi, I'm Zoe Routh." It's very commanding instead of "Hi, I'm Zoe Routh," which doesn't sound as commanding as Zoe Routh. So practice that. The other thing, here's another couple of fun tips too. Facial expressions. Oh my goodness. Smiling. People, smile. It makes such a big difference. It makes you feel better. It's contagious. It will uplift people. I can't tell you how much better it is when I'm speaking to an audience and I get some smiles. How do I get smiles? I smile at them. So smile. Everybody has a brilliant smile and everybody's face is transformed when they smile. I don't care if you have crooked teeth, yellow teeth, crooked lips, lopsided face, doesn't matter. Smiling makes you instantly more attractive. So do it. Apparently, eyebrow flicker and an eyebrow raise makes you seem more honest, open, and engaging. I don't know how you do eyebrow flicker deliberately. I think the thing to be aware of is that if you are a chronic eyebrow scruncher, practice relaxing your face and opening up your eyebrow raises a little bit. The big tip I often teach is from my second book, Moments. It's called Nose, Toes, and Pose, and this is about developing presence. So nose, toes, and pose, which helps you be anchored and present and compelling in any moment. Nose refers to breathing. So breathe through your nose, breathe into your diaphragm. It calms you down, boosts your testosterone, reduces cortisol and adrenaline. Toes is digging your toes into the ground. It makes you instantly more aware of the present moment. And it sort of cuts out all that filtering you've got going on around, whoa, will they like me? Am I going to make an impression here? Or how do I get attention here? So all that goes when you're digging your toes into the ground. And pose, that's adopting power poses. Possibly not in the middle of a networking function or in a meeting. That's when you have your hands on your hip or going into the victory pose. This I refer to always to Amy Cuddy's work on this, where she did research on different experiments and power poses where you're doing Wonder Woman or Superman, or I just ran across the line with my arms above in the air pose, boosts your blood markers. So boost testosterone, reduces cortisol again, just by changing your physiology. And Tony Robbins has been talking about this for years and years and years, and how that your physiology determines your emotions and that you can command your emotional state by changing your physical posture. So you get up. That's why he jumps on a little mini trampoline before he goes on stage. He gets the energy going and he consciously manages his emotional state by doing this. So if Tony Robbins can do this, you can too. Doesn't mean you need a little trampoline. You just need to manage your physicality. Start with nose, toes, and pose. If you tilt your head to the side and expose your neck, especially the right side of your neck, this is a gesture of vulnerability and makes you more likable and more trustworthy. So if you think about pictures of Diana, she constantly does that, right? She's always got her head tilted and her eyes looking up, giving her a posture of vulnerability and trustworthiness. So it's, and somewhat submissive, I have to say. So you need to be mindful of that. If you do it too much, you do take the submissive pose. So I think tilt a little bit, look up, and don't do it underneath the big giant eyelashes. Otherwise, you have Diana submissiveness happening. So tilt your head, though. Tilt your chin down. And that this is because if you imagine the converse, where you tilt your chin up, you look like a snob. So tilt your chin down, tilt your head a little bit. These are like micro adjustments. Makes you more open, interested, and trustworthy. And here's one, which I love, from Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, where he said one of the best ways to be influential is to ask for advice. Now, the caveat around that is it has to be genuine. Because if you just go seeking advice for the purpose of influence, people can sense that, and it doesn't have any effect whatsoever. So you need to seek out advice if you genuinely need it. And by doing that, you demonstrate interest in other people's opinions and value their input. It makes you highly more influential. All right, so to summarize, be, think, and do are your big tips for influence. So the big being tip is focus on others, not to the point of self-effacement, just to be an interested and curious person about your life and other people's lives. Serve you wonders. Think, expand your context into multiple layers, and the do is the physicality. Posture and breathing, nose, toes, and pose. I would love for you, if you enjoyed this podcast, to share it with others. And you will find the show notes and the link at zoerouth.com/podcast/influence. And even better, which would be great, because this is a new podcast, is to leave a review and rate it on iTunes. Apparently that helps. It helps spread the word. I would love that if you could do that for me. That'd be awesome. And in return, I can do something for you. Just shoot me an email and ask for a book recommendation or a query to your challenge, especially around influence. I'd be love to help you out. My email is zoe@innercompass.com.au. In the meantime, live well, lead well.